Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you again for coming to learn together this afternoon. Today we're continuing our series of Rav Moshe Feinstein and his halachic adversaries, and today we're going to be talking about the Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak was Dayan Weiss. He was the Gaivit of the Eda Charedis. And let's go, as we normally do, give a little bit of background about the Minchas Yitzchak, then a little bit of a discussion of his interactions with Rav Moshe Feinstein, at least to the extent that I know about them, or that are printed in the tshuvos of the two of them, and then the particular issue that we're going to discuss today that they disagree about is an issue that's actually omed al haperek. It's a very relevant contemporary issue, and that is whether one can be yotzei mitzvos, that you need to hear someone say something, if you could be yotzei such a mitzvah through a medium of technology, such as a microphone, a telephone, a Zoom, something of that nature. And particularly we'll maybe discuss a little bit about Mikra Megillah and whether one can be yotzei such a mitzvah, the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, through such a technology, because this too was a machlokas between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Dayan Weiss. So a little bit about Dayan Weiss first. A fascinating individual. He was by no means modern Orthodox, meaning he was quite Haredi. He was a dayan in a Hungarian town called, I could be mispronouncing this, Grosswardein, before the war, and it later became part of Romania. It was a vibrant kihila before the war, even though anti-Semitism was a part of life, as it was in many, many cities. You know, we're used to thinking that if you're walking down the street and someone screams out of a moving car, "Dirty Jew," that we've experienced the worst kind of anti-Semitism. Dayan Weiss's son said that if he came home from Cheder without getting a patch from a guy, that's his lashon, not mine, on the way, then it was a good day, meaning that was just part of life. That was just understood. It was the town was mostly in the tradition of the Chasam Sofer and his Talmidim, and the rabbi of the town was a Talmud of the Ksav Sofer. It also had a thriving Hasidic community in the town where Dayan Weiss was from, including the Avos Yisrael, who was the Vishnitzer Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Hager, and other Hasidim also had shuls there. There were also Reform Jews that lived in this Hungarian town, so it was a typical pre-war town. Then the war happened. In 1943, and things started getting really bad in Hungary. In March 1944, the city became a ghetto, and deportation to Auschwitz started, and Dayan Weiss kept hiding his family in different parts of the ghetto as it was liquidated, and ultimately he ended up, by the generosity of a family called the Rothbard family, in a chimney stack of a soap factory that the Rothbard family used to own. See, it used to be that once they passed into law that a Jewish family couldn't own a business, they all had to take non-Jewish partners to own the business with them. So this Rothbard family took a non-Jewish partner to own the business with them, and ultimately that non-Jewish family ran the business and became the sole owner of the business, and hid this family along with the Weiss family in the chimney stack of the soap factory, where the authorities would not be able to find them. A terribly, terribly frightening experience. The non-Jew who was hiding them thought that they were hiding 8 people, but they managed to sneak in 40 people into a tiny little area, and they were extremely malnourished. And in fact, right after they escaped, they had to be silent for hours and hours and hours at a time. They couldn't leave this little attic until late at night. And by the time they escaped, Dayan Weiss's first wife, Rivka, died of malnutrition in 1944. He suffered some terrible, terrible yisurin, as so many people did during the Holocaust. And he had only one son. Dayan Weiss had only one son, Beirush Weiss. I think he might still be alive. And then after the war, he tried to return back to this town in Hungary. And as a lot of people did, they figured they would rebuild life where they last knew. And a lot of people came back. He actually started yeshiva together with the Vizhnitzer Dayan. And he listened to hours and hours of testimony from people who saw others being sent to the left and being thrown off trains and being killed in all sorts of ways. And he was matir 30 agunos in one day. He was matir hundreds of agunos in total, as was Rav Moshe Feinstein, as was any posek who was alive at that time. They said that he was mesader kiddushin in his town in Hungary after the war for 30 couples in a single day, 30 agunos, that he was matir matir at once. Then he remarried, and he married a woman named Malka, the daughter of the Vasloi Rebbe, and then ultimately he realized that it wasn't going to happen in Romania, that the communists were, it was not going to happen, that it was going to be too difficult to rebuild the Jewish community, and he had a cousin in England who said that he'll bring him to England, so he figured he would go to England as a stopover on the way to the United States, because that seemed to be where everybody was going. But once he was in England, there was a big Talmud Chacham in England at the time by the name of Rav Yecheskel Abramsky, so Diane Weiss met with Rav Yecheskel Abramsky, and Rav Yecheskel Abramsky said, you should stay here. He was so impressed what a Talmud Chacham he was. He said, you should stay here. There's a community in Manchester. They could use some help. They could use a Dayan of your stature. He didn't speak a word of English. But he became the Av Beis Din in Manchester without speaking a word of English. So only spoke Yiddish. And that's in fact where he remained for quite some time. His second wife died in 1973. And then he married the daughter of the Vishnitzer Rebbe after that. And he ultimately died in 1989. His career, though, didn't stop in Manchester. He became the Av Beis Din in Manchester, and he stayed there until 1970. He was very close, Diane Weiss was very close with the Satmar Rebbe. The Satmar Rebbe was, in 1970, had suffered a stroke, but there was a void in leadership in the Eid HaRedis, I forget who, someone had died in the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim, and the Satmar Rebbe was thinking about who was going to be the replacement. And because he had just suffered a stroke, the story goes, and I saw this was an article that was printed in Mishpacha magazine a while ago, he called in a gabbai, the Satmar Rebbe called in one of his gabbayim, and he instructed him that the Eid HaRedis should invite, and he just suffered a stroke, his memory wasn't what it should have been, and he said, you know, the guy who writes the good tshuvas, and they said, the guy that writes the good tshuvas, who are you talking to? And they started guessing, and then finally someone said, you mean Diane Weiss? And he said, yeah, Rav Weiss, that's the one. They should invite him to the Eid HaRedis. And soon after that, he was appointed a Dayan in the Eid HaRedis, and then very soon after that, he became the Ravid of the Eid HaRedis, which I just learned through the research on this shir, that there's a difference between the Ravid and the Gaivid of the Eid HaRedis, the Rav Av Beis Din and the Gon Av Beis Din of the Eid HaRedis. Like the Satmar, I didn't know this either, the Satmar Rebbe was the Gaivid of the Eid HaRedis, even though he lived in Williamsburg. Not sure exactly how that worked, but I guess the spiritual mentor of the organization. But he became the Ravid of the Eid HaRedis at that time in the early 70s. And he did a lot of work for the Eid HaRedis. Now we know the Eid HaRedis as like this major hashkacha. He really provided the impetus to expand the hashkacha. It's the largest hashkacha in the world, if I'm not mistaken. It's the largest hashkacha in the world today. And he really did a lot of work to expand it. He instituted many chumras in shechita. He encouraged Rav Meir Brandsdorfer to take an active role in supervising the shechita and many of the chumras that were instituted there. And he's the one that recruited Rabbi Yaakov Bloy, who was the Rav of Sanhedria and was a banker at the time, but happened to have been an expert in Choshen Mishpat. In fact, Rav Bloy is the one that wrote that many, many volumes, I forget how many already, called Pischei Choshen. If you ever need to study any section of Choshen Mishpat, any relevant Shaila in Choshen Mishpat, it's like the handbook to go to, is the Pischei Choshen. So he recruited Rav Bloy away from the bank that he was working for to work to become a dayan in the Eid HaRedis Beis Din. And he did a lot of work there. And then ultimately in 1979, with the passing of the Satmar Rebbe, he became the Gaivid of the Eid HaRedis. And he was involved in every halachic issue that was happening at that time. He had a lot of correspondences with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, with Rav Vosner, with many of the other Gedolei Torah. His tshuvas, as you would expect of someone who lived during that period of time, cover every topic, every issue of technology that was developing at that time, and many old issues, building mikvaos and erevin, every topic under the sun. He called the sefer Minchas Yitzchak. He writes, Ukishmo Kenhu. Just think about what we just said, about the kind of suffering this person had, and then he describes why he called it Minchas Yitzchak. Yitzchak is obviously his name, but why Minchas Yitzchak? And he says, Kishmo Kenhu, Minchas Toda Hila Hashem. It's my thanks to Hashem. Al Kol HaTov Asher Gamal Gadalnu, that he did so much good for me. Shabarov Rachma v'chasadav ha'gadolim hitzilosi v'esbesi miyad yodei arurim, that he saved me from the cursed hands of the Nazis. That's what he writes in the Akdama to Chelek Aleph. He felt so grateful to have survived. And he notes that many Gedolei Torah sent him questions, and that's why he said, you'll find in my Sefer that I write a lot of tshuvas to Gedolei Torah. And he said, you may wonder, why in the world would Gedolei Torah send questions to me? Don't they know how to paskin on their own? And he said, of course they do. He says that that because of their anivus, because of their great humility, and he has a play on words, he says, rak lifa'amim Ari nase shoel, meaning instead of shuel, a fox, he says, Ari, a lion, becomes a shoel, a questioner. So they would send me questions, even though they are lions in learning in their own way, machmas godal an vasnuso. Or maybe, he says, based on what the Pischei Tshuva writes in Akdamat Avnezer, where the Pischei Tshuva writes that the gedolei adar, that are big bekiim and know how to paskin halacha, still took upon themselves an extra chumrah to always try to, before being matir, before coming up with a leniency, to consult with other rabbanim. That is a good practice. It is something that people should do. You shouldn't be too independent. You should make sure that your smaras, your logic, and is worked out clearly. So you said that could be why people sent letters to him as well. The characteristics of his tshuvas are that, first of all, nothing is misvara. Nothing is just based on the fact that logically this makes sense. Everything has to be with a raya. If he doesn't have a proof, if he doesn't have a proof text, then it's worthless to him. There's nothing that he goes with svara on, almost. And also, his style of writing is extremely challenging, and that was done purposely. His son explained that he, unlike the Igros Moshe, where people who are not great Talmidei Chachamim can pick up an Igros Moshe and maybe not understand all of the cheshbonos and all of the longer tshuvas, but some of the shorter tshuvas, for sure, people could understand if they just know how to read Hebrew. He said the Dayan Weiss wanted that his tshuvas should only be understood by Talmidei Chachamim, that people who are ready to deal on this level of halacha. And that was the style. That's what he did. That's the style that he wrote his tshuvas. And that's why they're very challenging tshuvas to read. But despite the fact that they're challenging, they gained tremendous popularity. If you look at any of the contemporary Kitzer Svar that describe, that discuss issues, in Piskei Tshuvos or any svarim like that, that go through contemporary poskim, he is quoted on just about every page in the Dirshu Mishnah Brura, things like that. He's quoted all over the place. It's hard for me to think of important tshuvas that he had, like tshuvas that really stick out as that are known as the Shita of the Minchas Yitzchak. But a couple, he held, for example, that plastic requires tevila, that you need to do tevilas kelim on plastic, which is somewhat of an unusual shita. He had a famous tshuva about a man who wanted to marry his wife's single surviving sister after the Holocaust, which was fairly common in those days, but they couldn't determine that his wife's fate. They couldn't determine whether his wife they didn't have clear evidence that his wife had died, so he came up with a heter in that case. In more contemporary issues in Chelek Dalet Simchas, he discusses that the Minhag Eretz Yisrael, in at least certain parts of Eretz Yisrael, that a husband shouldn't be in a delivery room when his wife is delivering a baby. He discusses in Chelek Vav about a chazan has to do chazaras hashatz in the nusach of the tzibur, of course, but he suggests that he could do his silent Shemona Esrei in his own nusach, whereas other poskim say no, your silent Shemona Esrei is supposed to be your practice for chazaras hashatz. How could you practice in one nusach and then do the chazaras hashatz in another nusach? But he thought that you can. That's as far as the Minchas Yitzchak himself. What about his interactions with Rav Moshe? So I know of no interactions directly that they had to each other. I couldn't find any tshuvas that they wrote directly to each other, but obviously they were aware of each other, and obviously if you were writing tshuvas in that tkufa, in that time period, you had to quote Rav Moshe, because Rav Moshe was the first and last word on everything. So it's not surprising that dozens of times throughout the Minchas Yitzchak, he quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's equally not surprising that Rav Moshe Feinstein almost never quotes the Minchas Yitzchak, because Rav Moshe Feinstein in general did not really quote contemporaries. Rav Moshe Feinstein was interested in what the Gemara said, what the Shulchan Aruch said, what the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch said, and maybe a Chassam Sofer, and the Yehuda. Whether he was aware of all the tshuvas of his contemporaries or not, he certainly did not quote them too often in his tshuvas. There's one place where Rav Moshe writes that the person who's asking the question to Rav Moshe said that, you know, it says in Minchas Yitzchak this way, and the Rav Moshe says, oh, and that which you told me, the Minchas Yitzchak writes, and he addresses the point. But the Rav Moshe on his own never brings up the Minchas Yitzchak. Like I said, Minchas Yitzchak does bring up Rav Moshe on a number of occasions. In his tshuva in Chelek Hesem and Ches about organ donation, he writes that this tshuva, this is the only case I could find where, even though it's not a direct correspondence, correspondence with Rav Moshe, there's an indication that there was correspondence, because he writes that that this tshuva was Hayu Lamara Enei Harava Gon Maram Feinstein Shlita. That this tshuva that I'm sending you, I first showed to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe wrote certain ha'aros, he wrote certain comments on this tshuva, so apparently there was some correspondence, even though I couldn't find directly in the Svarim letters that were written back and forth between them. And he questions Rav Moshe in a number of places in Hilchos Mikvaos and in Hilchos Geirus, and he supports Rav Moshe's opinion that Tefila B'tzibur is a chiyuv and not just something that is a positive proper thing to do. He supports Rav Moshe's tshuva about a younger sibling getting married before an older sibling, that it's permissible to do that, although he disagrees with some of Rav Moshe's proofs to that point. He agrees in principle to the idea. He discusses Rav Moshe's Shita, he supports Rav Moshe's Shita about using disposable cups for Kiddush, that a person should not use disposable cups for Kiddush, that itself is its own debate. Okay, so that's as far as I know. I'm sure there's a lot more out there, and I'm hopeful that maybe someone will send me some information. Someone who hears this year will send me some information, as usually happens. People always say, you said you didn't know anything, you're right, you didn't know anything, here's some information. So that's always welcome. But that's as far as I know about Rav Moshe and the Minchas Yitzchak's interactions with each other. So the particular topic I want to talk about, I'm cheating a little bit, because the Minchas Yitzchak doesn't really have a major tshuva on the topic, but we get a sense of what his opinion is on this topic, and it is not the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And again, the topic we're going to talk about is fulfillment of mitzvos through microphones and telephones. Why do I say microphones and telephones? That's not really a contemporary topic. Zoom is a contemporary topic. We should talk about fulfillment of mitzvos through Zoom. So one thing that we should realize is that Zoom did not really break any new halachic ground. There's no new halachos that relate to Zoom that weren't already spoken about, because halachically Zoom and a telephone are exactly the same thing. They don't feel the same, because you could see the room, you could see what's going on in the other place, you could see the books behind you and the pictures on the wall and everything. So you could see everything, so it feels, you know, when you're participating, for example, in a tefillah, and you can see the shul, so you feel more of a part of it, but halachically it's the same thing as hearing the tefillah on a telephone and participating that way. So that was an old discussion, and that's why when Rav Shechter wrote his recent tshuva about Hilchos Purim, and I know that your Rav, Rabbi Muskin, and a number of the other local Rabbanim in Los Angeles were very involved in getting Rav Shechter's sign-off on how to provide protocols for Purim. So Rav Shechter wrote that this is something that for certain people, certain communities for this year, but it's not something that we're looking to rely on in the future because of this very machlokas. Can you or can you not fulfill a mitzvah through these kinds of technological mediums? So Rav Shechter thought that because of the machlokas we're about to elaborate on, that b'shas hadchak, as this year is for many, many people, a shas hadchak, we can rely on a das yachid, we can rely on an opinion of those who hold that you can, in fact, be yotzei the mitzvah. Who is that opinion that holds you could be yotzei a mitzvah in such a way through a telephone or through a Zoom? It is none other than Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Moshe, there are two, actually. There are two major poskim that are held this way against almost every other posek. So normally when you have two poskim against almost everybody else, you say those two poskim are totally outvoted and there's nothing to talk about. The problem is the two are Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish. So, you know, those are some pretty big names. So when you have Rav Moshe Feinstein in the United States and the Chazon Ish in Eretz Yisrael saying that you can't, even though they're outvoted by just about everybody else, you know, that's a pretty significant grouping. In fact, Rav Schechter told us recently that when the Sefer Darkei Tshuva came out from the Munkacher, one of the people who wrote a Haskama was disappointed that he wrote a Haskama. He felt that he wanted to withdraw his Haskama. Darkei Tshuva is a classic on Yeridea. Why did he want to withdraw his Haskama? Because what the Darkei Tshuva does is he quotes all the different opinions of Poskim. And when the person saw the Sefer, he saw that he gave equal weight to all of the different Poskim. Not every posek is the same. Not every rabbi carries the same weight as everybody else. So sometimes by giving an even amount of time, equal time to everybody, and equal printing space to everybody, you're actually corrupting the halacha, because there are certain people that are much greater and whose opinions carry much more weight in halacha. So anyway, Rav Moshe Feinstein is one of the poskim who's makel about being yotzei mitzvos through technology. We should realize the basis of the entire sugya is a Mishnah Maseches Megillah. It talks about Tkias Shofar, actually. Hatokei l'toch habor o l'toch hadus o l'toch hapites im kol shofar shama yatzav im kol avara shama lo yatzav. The Mishnah says that if someone blows a shofar into a cave or a pit, something that will create a tremendous echo. So if you actually hear the sound of the shofar, you're yotzei the mitzvah. But if you only hear the echo and not the shofar itself, then you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So that's what all the posts can work on. When you hear something through a microphone, a telephone, and then the question becomes, is a microphone and a telephone the same thing? Telephone and Zoom might be the same thing, but are a microphone and a telephone the same thing? When you hear something through a microphone or through a telephone, have you heard the call, the actual call, the call shofar? Or have you only heard the call havara, the echo? The Mishnah says you're not yotzei if all you've heard is the echo. So Pashtus is, most poskim say, at best it's an echo. You haven't heard the actual sound, and therefore you're not yotzei. And then the poskim assume, and if that's true about shofar, it's got to be true about every other mitzvah. If you want to be yotzei kriyas haTorah or mikra megillah or any other mitzvah in that way, both of those assumptions are questionable. So, first of all, in Mincha Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in Chelek Aleph Siman Tes that he published a maimer where he said that Rav Shlomo Zalman expressed his own opinion that one is not yotzei, and then he said he had the opportunity to run into the Chazon Ish, to meet the Chazon Ish, and he said va'amar li sheleda'ato ein ze kol kach pashut. The Chazon Ish told me, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that he doesn't think it's so obvious that one is not yotzei. V'yitachein dekivon sha'kol anishma notzer al yed the gamma kol nishma miyad kiderech hamedabrim. The Chazon Ish said, well, look, the voice that you hear through the technological medium is created by the speaker, and it's heard immediately when the speaker speaks. So efshar the gamze chashiv kashomei amamish mipi amedaber otokeya. It could be that's considered that you've actually heard it directly from the person. And he says when the Gemara says kol havara shama lo yatsa, that when you hear an echo you're not yotzei, that's because there's a delay in an echo. When there's a delay in the transmission, in this sense, maybe a phone is even better than Zoom, because sometimes depending on your internet connection, Zoom might not come through exactly at that moment. Usually it does. It was certainly better than a WhatsApp call. I find that the WhatsApp calls are always with a delay. If there's a delay, that would be more of a kol havara. And that's where a motion or a chaim chilek beisim and kufches says that when the Mishnah speaks about kol havara, he has a different distinction. He says, no, you know what an echo is? An echo is a weakened sound. But when the sound is strengthened, then that's not a problem. That's not a downgrade in the sound. That's an upgrade. So says Rav Moshe, if a sound is heard through a microphone, through a telephone, so now the sound is able to carry further and you're able to hear it where you otherwise would not have been able to hear it. That's better than a kol havara. Kol havara, that the Mishnah says you're not yotze, is when the sound is a faint echo of the original sound. That's the distinction that Rav Moshe Feinstein tries to make, and he suggests that based on that, one should be yotze. And Rav Moshe writes, but ach mikol makom kivan shlo barur leheter vu inyan chadash bichlal yesh limchos kedei lemona mir lirdof achrei chadashos acheros shelohutim b'mezeh b'medinas elu. Even Rav Moshe says that if you're dealing with a normal circumstance, we should not rely on using telephones to be yotzei a mitzvah under normal circumstances, because it's a new issue. It's not the way we've always done mitzvos, and it's just feeding into the frenzied masses who are always looking for new ways to do things. And that generally, we're a very traditional religion. Generally, we follow what with the way we've always done things. It takes a lot to make changes. They happen, but it takes a lot to make changes. And Rav Moshe says, even though I think you're technically yotze, I do not think it's a great idea. But he holds that you are yotze for a time of a shasad chak, like perhaps the times that we're living in now. Now, the Minchas Yitzchak in Chelek Aleph, Simon Lamed Zayin, O Zayin, quotes someone else that we've spoken about in one of these shiurim, Rav Henkin, where Rav Henkin is machmir, and that Rav Shlomo Zalman is machmir. By the way, it turns out, I pointed this out in one of my svarim, that if you're machmir and you hold that it's not called the voice of the person when you hear it even through a microphone, which I know one of my own rabbeim, Rav Willig Shlita, is very machmir when he says a bracha under a chuppah that he doesn't speak into the microphone. They offer him the microphone, he pushes out, and then he just projects his voice very loudly, because he holds that why rely on a microphone if you don't have to rely on a microphone. But it should turn out that if you hold that you're not actually yotze, that you're not yotze through a microphone, then you hold it's not a voice, and therefore if a woman were singing through a microphone, you would hold technically that that's not kalisha, because you're not hearing the voice of the woman. I mean, that chumra would turn out to be a kula. Now, obviously, if a person has hirhurim or something like that, that alone is usr, but it would not be a violation of kalisha in a technical sense. That's a possible ha'ara to make. Now, in Chelek Beis, Simon Kuf Yud Gimel, Minchas Yitzchak has a tshuva to someone else that we've also spoken about, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who distinguishes between a shofar on the one hand and Kriyas HaTorah and Megillah on the other hand. He says, Kol Havara, you're not Yotzei, that's by a shofar. But by Kriyas HaMegillah, even Kol Havara is going to work. By Kriyas HaTorah, even Kol Havara is going to work. Why? What's the reason for the distinction? He says, because by shofar, it's the kol that's ma'akev. And if there's a kol with a tarovis, with some sort of mixture, so then it's not you're not hearing purely a kol shofar. By Kriyas HaTorah and Kriyas HaMegillah, it could be that you are yotzei, because it's all coming from the korei, and it's shomea keona. As long as you're hearing the voice of the korei also, even though there's a mixture of another voice in there as well, you would still be yotzei. In fact, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and Mekrayi Kodesh on Purim Simin Yir Aleph understands that even if you can't hear the original voice, it's through a telephone and not through a microphone, he thinks you'd still might be yotzei Megillah. So here we have like this compromise opinion. I mean, we said that there are two basic opinions. You either are yotzei mitzvos through technology or you're not. There could be somewhere in between. It could be that it depends which mitzvah. It could be that shofar, no, but Megillah and Kriyas HaTorah, yes. And in fact, Rav Sturmbach in Tshuvas VaHanhagos says, no, there's no difference between shofar and Megillah, but he thinks Kriyas HaTorah is different. He thinks you're not yotzei with shofar and Megillah, but Kriyas HaTorah, you would be yotzei. Where does he get that idea from, that Kriyas HaTorah, you'd be yotzei through a microphone as opposed to shofar and Mikra Megillah? He says, because Kriyas HaTorah is really just Talmud Torah Barabin. as long as the fellow is reading from a Torah and he's teaching Torah publicly and people are hearing it and they're hearing the words of Torah, so then they're being Yotzei. It doesn't rely on Shomea Ka'one. You don't need the listeners to be as if they are saying the words. Just hearing the words of Torah, that means they're participating in the Talmud Torah. In fact, Mori V'Rabbi Rav Shachter in Nefesh HaRav, page Kuf Lamed Vav, quotes from Rav Salvechik that someone had once asked Rav Salvechik that there was he wasn't getting along with someone had asked Rav Salvechik's father, Rav Moshe Salvechik, that if he has to switch shuls because he didn't get along with the Balkorei in the shul, and the Balkorei told this fellow, every time I lane, I'm having in mind not to be motzi you in Kriyas HaTorah. So the fellow wanted to know, am I never yotze Kriyas HaTorah? Do I have to switch shuls? So Rav Moshe Salvechik said, you don't have to switch shuls. You could be yotze Kriyas HaTorah whether he has in mind to be motzi you or not. Well, wait a second. If someone lanes Megillah for me and has in mind not to be motzi me, if someone blows shofar for me and has in mind not to be motzi me, I'm not yotze. So why is Kriyas HaTorah different? Rav Salvechik said, Rav Moshe Salvechik said that same distinction, that Kriyas HaTorah is Talmud Torah Barabin. Rav Salvechik gave the mashal. He said, imagine that I have all my Talmidim sitting in front of me in class, and there's one Talmud who I love. I think he's a sweetie pie. I think he's wonderful. He just doesn't understand a word that I'm saying. So, and then there's another Talmud who's a little rough around the edges, and I don't love him so much, but he's brilliant, and he understands everything that I'm saying. So, even if I have in mind not to be motzi him in the shir, he's still, the second Talmud is still the one that's gaining something from the shir, because he understands the Divrei Torah, meaning that's what Kriyas HaTorah is. Kriyas HaTorah is Talmud Torah Barabim. It happens to be the Mikra Megillah is also Talmud Torah, but it's not only Talmud Torah. Meaning Mikra Megillah is also, there are elements, it's a different shir for a different time, about Mikra Megillah being a kiyum of Talmud Torah, fulfillment of Talmud Torah, but there's also just this mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. So again, one of the disputes between Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Minchas Yitzchak is whether one can be Yotzei mitzvah such as Mikra Megillah over a telephone. Rav Moshe Feinstein himself, when his daughter became an almana, when Rav Shiskal passed away, used to call his daughter every Motzai Shabbos and say Avdallah for her over the phone. That's Lashitaso. He held that she could be Yotzei the mitzvah of Avdallah that way over the phone. Many other poskim would have said that doesn't accomplish anything, that you're not Yotzei over the phone. So this is that machloka. So if you saw in Rav Shechter's guidance where he said that we can rely on those shitos, b'shas hadchak, that's what he was referring to. He was referring to Rav Moshe Feinstein in this particular tshuva, and probably the Chazon Ish as well, unlike the Minchas Yitzchak and many, many others. As always, been a pleasure to learn with you.
Did Rav Shechter ever tell you what the Rav's position was pertaining to?
I don't remember. I don't remember if he ever spoke about what Rav Salvechik's opinion was on this.
And isn't Megillah also Tefillah? It's Hallel.
Megillah, right. So Megillah is many things. Yeah, Megillah is Hallel. Someone asks, is an Avel let alone the Megillah? Because an Avel typically doesn't do Hallel, right? So Kriyas is Uhelula. That's interesting. We have a lot of Avelim, unfortunately, this year. Yeah, and we also need a lot more Balei Kriya for Megillah this year because we're spreading out in so many different
ways. The question was asked, if you can't hear Megillah this year, maybe you should say Hallel. I saw this interesting question.
Interesting.
Replace. Somebody for some reason can't hear Megillah.
The poskim discuss this. They talk about this, yeah. Yeah, they talk about maybe Kriyas Zuelula is just an expression. It means that there was no need to be Mesakein Hallel. But now that they weren't Mesakin Hallel, they weren't. So there's no Hallel. Plus, the Gemara says that's not the only reason why we don't say Hallel on Purim. It's also because Akati Avdei Achashverosh Hanan. So I think typically we assume not to say Hallel. Okay. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much.
The next year with Rabbi Leibowitz will be Sunday, the 14th of March, which is also Rosh Chodesh Nisan.
Great. Looking forward.
Thank you. Have a Purim Sameach, Rabbi.
You too. Purim Sameach to everybody.
Hope.